Good evening and welcome to the Indiana Debate Commission's 2024 primary debate for governor. Broadcast live from Hine Hall Auditorium on the campus of IUPUI. This event is the final formal debate of the 2024 primary season, the final opportunity for Hoosier voters to hear from the Republicans vying to succeed Governor Eric Holcomb, who is barred by Indiana's Constitution from seeking a third consecutive term. Of course, the winner of the May 7 Republican gubernatorial primary will advance to November's general election. I am your moderator, John Schwantes, the host of WFYI Public Media's Indiana Lawmakers Program, the state's longest running public affairs show. This debate is made possible by the generosity of our major underwriters, AARP Indiana, the Indiana Broadcasters Association, and the Indiana State Bar Association, as well as additional support from the Indiana Coalition for Open Government, the Indiana League of Women Voters of Indiana, the Hoosier State Press Association Foundation, and Comcast. The Indiana Debate Commission is dedicated to putting voters first. Accordingly, we invited members of the public to submit questions about the issues of greatest concern to them. More than 120 people submitted nearly 200 questions, and that input formed the basis of the questions that I will pose this evening. None of the questions has been shared with the candidates or their campaign staffs. The order of the candidates' introductions and their positions on stage were determined by drawing. Enough housekeeping. Now, without further delay, let's meet the participants. Brad Chambers of Indianapolis, founder and CEO of Buckingham Companies, a real estate investment firm, and former head of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation under Governor Holcomb. Suzanne Crouch of Evansville, Indiana's 52nd Lieutenant Governor, and a former state auditor, state representative, and county commissioner. Eric Doden of Fort Wayne, founding partner of Domo Development Company and Domo Ventures, a private equity firm, and former president of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation under Governor Mike Pence. Curtis Hill of Elkhart, former Indiana Attorney General, and former four-term Elkhart County Prosecutor. And Jamie Rittenauer of Indianapolis, a former compliance officer, athletic director, and executive secretary, who is now a stay-at-home mother of five. And you'll notice there are five lecterns on stage instead of six, as we had hoped. U.S. Senator Mike Braun, who, of course, is also seeking the Republican nomination for governor, was unable to attend this evening. He was called back to Washington for an important Senate vote on a foreign aid package. So he, unfortunately, could not join us this evening. The candidates have agreed to a set of rules, which includes a prohibition on props and prepared notes. This evening's debate will feature a mix of yes or no questions answerable by a show of hands, and a more traditional set of open-ended questions of various lengths. And I will not hesitate to cut off candidates who fail to abide by the stated time limits. And I'll take it a step further. I will try to gently nudge people back on path if they're addressing a question and sort of stray from the point of the question. So I'll do it with a smile on my face and with kindness in my heart. But we'll try to address the matters at hand that voters care about most. All right, now we have dispensed with all of the housekeeping I think we need to do tonight. Let's get to the questions. This first round of questions will be open-ended, and I will give you a time limit for each one. The candidate who receives the first question will have 1 minute to answer that question. The other candidates generally will have a shorter period of time that I will specify, and you can use that to agree, disagree, or add any other thoughts that you would like. So according to the drawing, our first question will go to Mr. Chambers, and he will have 1 minute to respond. A 2024 study by Forbes Advisor ranked Indiana the second best state in the nation in which to start a business, citing the state's low $100 registration fee, state funding for small business startups, a high business survival rate, a reasonable cost of living, and a high percentage of working age residents. What specifically would you do to nudge us from number two to number one? Again, you have a minute.
Thanks, John. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate the audience and this opportunity to speak to voters. Listen, entrepreneurship is extremely important. I am one. I started a company from nothing in 1984, from zero. I know the journey. I know how difficult the journey is to start a business, to grow a business, and keep a business going for 40 years. I'm a career job creator, a career problem solver. And so while I'm pleased to see that Indiana's ranked number two for small and medium-sized businesses, there's more to do. And I started to do that as Secretary of Commerce for the state of Indiana, working for my dollar a year as an appointed position. We need to make sure more capital is available to innovators and entrepreneurs. We need to lean into the technology sector. We formed a website called Connect IND for high school students and for college students if they wanted to learn about entrepreneurship. We need to start earlier with education and educating our high schools about the opportunities to work for yourself in this state. We have terrific entrepreneurs. Eli Lilly is one of them. I'm sorry.
I'm afraid we're out of time.
It's fine, John. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. The Colonel would appreciate you ending on him, though.
That's right.
Let's go then to each of you. You'll have 30 seconds to, again, offer a response to much the same question. How can we take an already strong economic set of circumstances here in Indiana and take it to the next level? Curtis Hill.
Well, the way that we take an already strong state and take it to the next level is very simple. We get government out of the way. We need to cut regulations and make sure that we allow our entrepreneurs to work and to move forward. We need to provide tax incentives to lower taxes to make sure that the economy is strong and robust. But it's really a matter of making sure that government is limited in its capacity to stay in the way of business as it's growing and developing.
Very good. Mr. Doten, same question to you.
Well, this is at the heart and soul of our Indiana Main Street initiative. For 50 years, we've ignored our small towns and the 2.5 million people that live there. And as we begin to restore communities across the state with the help of local leaders in the private sector, this will lead to tremendous small business growth and opportunities. We've already seen this happen in every community that we begin to restore, and this is why we're excited about what we're doing with our Indiana Main Street initiative and just restoring small towns.
Ms. Crouch.
As a state representative, auditor, state, and lieutenant governor, I played a key role in turning Indiana around. I want to continue that by eliminating the state income tax. Not only will you put $2,000 back in the pockets of average Hoosiers, but according to the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the income tax is the single most tax that could help, if we could eliminate it, small business growth. So that is what I want to do, put money in your pocket, help small businesses grow, and attract people to Indiana when we become a no-income tax state.
And Ms. Rittenour.
Well, I was asked a similar question this morning in an interview. I was asked, how do you keep the good times rolling? And my answer was, I've been on the ground for 2.5 years, and the Hoosiers are not telling me that the good times are rolling. Right now, we've got over 100,000 jobs that cannot be placed. We have small businesses that are looking for employees. And so what I say is that every senior that graduates in the state of Indiana should be doing an apprenticeship before they graduate. We want to make sure that our seniors, our next generation, are taken care of. That's not easy to do in a state where education is failing, but Indiana goodness will bring that to Hoosiers.
Very good. We'll go on to another question, and we will return to the order. I think I may have inadvertently botched the order in which you were before. So,
how do we rebut if we want to have a tag on or a rebuttal?
I'll tell you what. Because I'm a kind, generous person, and I'm going to look at you to keep you on track with the aforementioned smile, 15 seconds. Go ahead.
No, I'm not asking. I'm just asking the process by which. I don't have a rebuttal right now, but in the future, I'm sure to have a rebuttal.
All right. Now you have that ace in the hole. Very good. All right.
Will you call me, or do I raise my hand?
Well, it's not a classroom, but but a raising of the hand would be good.
Sure.
And if somebody mentions you or calls you out on a policy, I will make sure that you are given the time to talk to that. All right. So the order has been restored, and we will continue now with a question to Mr. Hill. Some businesses have voiced concerns that Indiana's social policies in areas such as abortion and LGBTQ rights might hurt our convention business and our ability to attract and retain talent needed to grow Indiana's economy. How do you respond to these concerns? And you have a minute to do that.
Well, I think we need to understand what kind of a state we live in. We are a state that's about families. We want to make sure that our families are at the center of what we do here in the state. Economic development and economic growth is a wonderful opportunity for us, but not at the cost of who we are as Hoosiers. We were the first state to have a firm pro-life position, banning abortion. Businesses know when they come into this state that's what to expect. So we don't change who we are to be attractive to the outside world. We need to maintain our standards. We need to be the type of state that's welcoming to families, welcoming to businesses, and doing the best job that we can to move our agenda forward.
And we will continue with additional responses from the remainder of the candidates here. 30 seconds apiece. We'll go to Mr. Doden. Your response about social policies and any possible impact they might have on our economic development.
Well, I think, you know, I've made this clear. I'm ardently pro-life. I think what people are looking for are leaders of conviction. And I'm ardently pro-life. I think it's a human rights issue. I think it's also a religious issue. But we're also doing creative things like zero-cost adoption. Where you have an adoption fund that will help parents not only pay for adoption, but the aftercare. And, you know, these are policies. If you look at our policies, that you should go look at our website at dodenforindiana.com. We have them all in writing, and they've all been improved by people like you. These are policies that everyone can agree with and get behind.
Ms. Crouch?
We are a culturally conservative state, but one of the things we have to do a better job of is telling the authentic story of Indiana. I head up the Indiana Destination Development Corporation, and while our neighboring states have spent anywhere from $20 to $60 million a year telling their story, we have historically spent $2 million. We now have additional resources to tell that authentic story of Indiana.
Ms. Rittenour.
Indiana, the Conservative Party has done a poor job of talking about the reality that we're in a moral crisis in our country right now. We need to support our families. We all know that the reason why we are where we are right now is because there is a crisis in the family. The family is broken. The state of Indiana is for life. We believe that you reap what you sow. And so we want to be a state that encourages that in all ways. It's not just from the womb to the tomb. It's in education with our children. It's in our small businesses. We are a state that stands for life, and we are very proud to be that.
And Mr. Chambers.
I believe we need to keep families at the center of our everyday lives. I believe we need to keep education at the center of our everyday lives. I believe we need to continue to build on quality of life for all Hoosiers, for our kids and our grandkids to build their lives in Indiana. And I believe we need to have economic opportunity for everybody to build their lives in Indiana and continue to lean into the Midwest values and the conservative values of the state.
Very good. Our next question goes to Mr. Doden. As I mentioned in the introduction, a few moments ago, I pointed out that you, of course, headed the Economic Development Corporation under Governor Pence. What role would the IEDC play in your administration, and how do you respond to critics who argue that the IEDC interferes with free enterprise, that it lacks transparency, favors certain regions, and essentially is able to pick economic winners and losers? 1 minute.
Yeah, I've been very clear on this, that the IDC should not be spending billions of dollars of taxpayer money buying land in one county and then discover we have a water problem and then taking water and resources from a smaller community to central Indiana. This is just inappropriate behavior. What the IDC was under our leadership was a place that businesses could come from all over the state to get help dealing with the bureaucracy of government. And that is the role that the IDC will play under my leadership. I do not believe that the IDC should be the LEAP Economic Development Corporation. It should be the Indiana Economic Development Corporation. And that is the kind of focus we're going to have with the IDC. But we still need, businesses need help all over the state. You know, people call us all the time and said, I'm having a difficult time getting a permit. I'm having a difficult time getting this information. And that is the proper function of the IDC, and that's the role it will play under my leadership.
Very good. Ms. Crouch?
As governor, I'll flip the script on economic development. We will empower our local and regional economic development organizations so we can have true collaboration and partnership. That's how we are able to grow our economy. But also eliminating the state income tax puts money into Hoosiers' pockets. It helps small businesses grow, and that it attracts workers to Indiana.
Ms. Rittenour.
The Indiana Economic Development Corporation is not what Hoosiers want in the state of Indiana. They want to be able to know where their property tax money is going. Actually, what they want is no property tax. They want to be able to know why we put a whale of a company in the middle of a desert-like situation where it's going to take $2 billion to get the water to it, which, again, they do not want this. The Indiana Economic Development Corporation also has a regional office in China. With billion-dollar companies comes billions of strengths. We have to be very aware that when these companies come into our state, they are also bringing all of their lobbyists and all of their ideology. We need to rebuild Indiana. There are many vacant buildings in our state that we can occupy. We do not have to expand. We can rebuild, which will save taxpayer money.
Very good. And Mr. Chambers, I'm glad you asked me earlier about how you get rebuttal time. You may want to use it.
We may need to get more a bigger clock.
Several people here certainly talked about the IEDC during your leadership.
Yeah.
You oversaw that agency certainly under Eric Holcomb's administration, and in fact were in place when the LEAP project took shape.
Yeah.
Weigh in on that. A couple people have not referred to you by name, but certainly that's an agency that you oversaw.
John, it's a terrific contrast between career politics and small thinking and big thinking that's going to put more money in Hoosier pockets. Under my leadership, for a dollar a year, I stepped away from my business. For a dollar a year, we grew the economy by $51 billion in 2 years, and those are high-wage jobs. Wages in Indiana are below U.S. average. That's unacceptable to me. We went out and solved that, bringing in $51 billion worth of high-wage jobs, transforming communities all over the state, from Kokomo to St. Joe County to Allen County to Vigo County. So, you know, to say that it doesn't have a role, we are competing against Ohio and China and North Carolina. And you are either going to win or we're not going to win. But they will take those jobs if we don't want them in Indiana, to keep our kids and our grandkids here, to keep the kids that are graduating for Purdue. Do I got time? 2 years ago, I was sitting in Seoul, South Korea with a company called SK Hynix. 2 weeks ago, I'm in Tippecanoe County celebrating a $4 billion investment with high-wage jobs in the semiconductor industry that Ty Dunk sponsored in the CHIPS Act and that Senator Braun vetoed and didn't support. If we listened to Senator Braun, we wouldn't have that $4 billion investment with high-wage jobs. We're either planning to win or we're not in this state.
All right. Mr. Hill.
Well, the big problem here... Thank you. The big problem here is that the IEDC is a shadow government. We're talking about a quasi-agency. What does over quasi mean? We're taking public money and putting it into an organization that hides the ball, lack of transparency. So all these wonderful things that Brad talks about, that's fine if you're playing above board and playing with an open deck. Under my administration, we will rein them in and make sure that they're providing the resources across the board and in balance with the rest of the state, certainly not picking winners and losers. And the LEAP project is a prime example of the state gone wrong.
I see we have some interested parties down there who want to weigh in this.
Yes.
Let's take, all right, we're going to deviate from the script. About 15 seconds for each of you who wants to address this. We'll start down at the end.
Sure, I'd love to go first.
Ms. Rittenour, go ahead.
I was just noticing that Brad didn't mention Boone County, because Boone County would be the county that is having all of the water taken from them. I actually met a man that was from Boone County. And he came up to me and he said to me, this is not our Indiana anymore. And so I would like to know if Brad can address the many Hoosiers in the state that don't feel like it's their state of Indiana anymore. Because they're they're not about the billions of dollars and billions of strengths.
Ms. Crouch, did you want to weigh in on this too?
As a former county commissioner, you have to have collaboration. And visiting with the Boone County and Tippecanoe County commissioners, there has not been that collaboration between the state and local government. That's absolutely critical. That's why I want to empower local and economic development organizations to have that true partnership.
All right. Mr. Doden, go ahead.
Yeah, so again, I think we need to have a 92-county strategy in which every community has an opportunity to be successful, and where we recognize that small business and startups drive our economy. We all enjoy and appreciate the large investments that are made, but small businesses drive our economy.
Mr. Hill, can you get more applause this time, just with a mere introduction?
I think I can. I'm kind of concerned that the Lieutenant Governor is suggesting that there needs to be something done about the Economic Development Corporation. That's a part of her administration. So we have two people here on stage that are actually part of the EDC problem, and we need to be able to fix that problem by bringing transparency into the process.
All right, what we're going to do... We got it after this time.
Wait a minute.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to stick with the order. We're going to give Mr. Chambers his time to respond. And those of you who have been, we can't spend our whole time on this question, although certainly it is a point of contention. Yeah. But let me see where we go with this. Yeah. Please take it away.
I'm going to need more than 15 seconds, I'm just telling you. Listen, the fact that he defines tens of thousands of high-wage jobs coming to Indiana as a problem tells you that he's not the right leader for Indiana. We need to grow our economy, to grow our economy and put more money in people's pockets, to fix education, to support our police and our firefighters and address mental health. Number two, on water. There is an abundance of water in this state, but the career politicians like Suzanne Crouch didn't take the time and didn't have the interest in studying it and knowing that it's an asset that we can use strategically against our competitors like Ohio and Michigan in Illinois.
All right.
So we have an abundance of water. It's a transportation issue, bringing in outside investment to pay for that, not taxpayers.
All right. Now, two of you cited, we'll get you. Hold on. Ms. Crouch, two people have suggested that you're a career politician, and Mr. Hill suggested that as part of the administration, you should have been more vocal, perhaps, as it related to your concerns now articulated about the LEAP project.
I am proud of my service as a public servant. You know, and I have voted for the largest property tax cut in our state's history. I pushed for broadband expansion, stood up for families that were being, you know, being victimized by the FSSA, ended up standing up for people that are struggling with mental illness and addiction. Yeah, I'm proud of my service, Mr. Chambers, and certainly Mr. Hill.
This is getting good. All right. Ms. Rittenour, finish us off on this question.
Sure. Let's just finish it off. So here's the bottom line, Hoosiers. In case you did not know, there are many Hoosiers in the state of Indiana that are losing their land because the IEDC came in and courted them for pricing that was way above the value of the land, which makes it hard for people to compete for that land here in the state of Indiana. Here's what's important, and first of all, I would love to get on the record where all those 10,000 jobs are. We're 100,000 jobs that need to be filled in the state of Indiana.
Right.
We
right.
need to rebuild and not expand with billion-dollar companies that bring billion-dollar strings.
All right. Tell you what. It's interesting. I've been around Indiana in politics for a long time. I never thought I'd see Republicans fighting so much over economic development. I didn't back in the Bob Orr days. It's interesting. All right. So let's not leave. Let's compromise. We won't leave economic development entirely, but we'll give our vocal cords a little bit of a break, and we'll use our hands with a raising of the hands to show on this one. So in 2022, Congress passed the CHIPS and Science Act. This law, which of course was co-authored by Indiana Senator Todd Young, co-authored with Chuck Schumer, authorized $280 billion in new funding for domestic research and manufacturing in the high-tech sector. Senator Braun, who again is not with us this evening, voted against that measure. Obviously, as co-author, Todd Young supported it. Show of hands, how many of you think that Mike Braun took the right vote on that issue?
What was the legislation?
The CHIPS Act. Do you agree that it was a flawed bill, and would you have voted the way that, in fact, Senator Young did? Just show me your hands here.
I support Senator Young, if that's your question.
Oh, I messed you up by suggesting Braun, and I switched it.
Yeah,
all right, let's make this.
We're going to have a hard time.
All right.
Raising our hands.
Yep. All right. All right. Let's make this easier. Had you been in the Senate, would you have voted yes or no? All of you who would have voted for the CHIPS Act, raise your hand. So we have, for those listening, we have Mr. Chambers, Mr. Doden, and those who would have voted against. We have Ms. Rittenour, and we have Mr. Hill. Ms. Crouch, did you raise your hand one way or the other?
You know, I would vote against it based upon what I know. But, you know, I was talking about hypothetical questions. I'm not sure that's what we're here to discuss.
Well, there's not much hypothetical, though, about the notion of plants that are opening in a high-tech sector, which many states across the country are benefiting.
I just had a question on that.
No, we're not going to have questions at this point. No, I asked the questions. Sorry. Okay. Remember, I said I'd be kind of gentle. Don't push me. Let's get back to, at the risk of restoring some sanity and some semblance of timing, to the open-ended questions, which, again, our order goes back to Ms. Crouch. Indiana currently has one of the lowest income tax rates in the country among states that actually charge an income tax, and soon will have the lowest rate in the nation. Yet you wish to eliminate the income tax entirely, as you pointed out in your opening statement. Is it realistic to think that you can take away $8 billion, which is more than a third of Indiana's tax revenue, without hurting services and programs that you've said you care about deeply, such as caregiver pay for Hoosiers with disabled family members? And you will have 1 minute to answer.
You know, I'm one to lead the fight to eliminate the state income tax. I travel Indiana. Hoosiers are struggling today due to the high cost of living, inflation, and Bidenomics. We can put thousands of dollars back into their pockets every year. Now, my opponents will scream bloody murder and say we can't do it. But that money's yours, not theirs, and you will always spend it more wisely than the government. And so it has to be phased in. It can't happen overnight. We have to have triggers in place to protect against economic downturns. But as former Vice Chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, as former Auditor of State, we can absolutely do it. We do it by limiting government growth. We do it by ending wasteful government spending. And we do it by finding efficiencies in government. When we do, we give you money back, which you'll put into the economy, which grows our revenues. We end up allowing small businesses to grow and prosper, and then we attract people to Indiana. And today, where are they moving to? Tennessee, Texas, Florida, South Dakota, no income tax states who, by the way, their GDP and their population is growing at greater rates than Indiana.
All right.
We need to be competitive.
All right. Ms. Rittenour.
Well, I'll start by saying whenever I wasn't included in the two debates, it wasn't my voice that they weren't including. It was the Hoosier voice. Hoosiers want a true conversation about property tax in this state. And the reason is because property tax has been raised for many over 40%. And so when we're having these conversations, we need to have the conversations at the Hoosier dining room table. Right now, when we talk about income tax, what we are most concerned about is this phasing in. Because to the everyday voter, when they hear phasing in, they hear that's not going to happen. So we are looking to look at property taxes, and we think that we can have a real conversation on the ground with our local offices on May 8th when you elect me to be your Republican governor in the primary.
All right, Mr. Chambers.
Yeah, this is a political talking point if there ever was one. She has not articulated a plan to cut $12 billion out of our budget, number one. She tweeted 2 weeks ago that vote for me and it'll be the last time you pay income taxes. So that's inconsistent with this phasing in concept she's got. She's not told us how much she's going to have to cut from education or public safety or police or mental health or health care or quality of life of initiatives. I go around the state and not a Hoosier that I've met believes that this is doable.
Very good. Mr. Hill.
Well, the income tax, acts the tax proposal is a gimmick. It's not realistic. But what we can really offer are some solutions to our tax situation. We've got the Mike Brown gas tax. That was the biggest tax that we put in the state of state's Indiana history. And it's not the only big tax that Mike has. The CARES Act is the largest tax increase in the history of mankind, $4 trillion, and he's responsible for that as well. So we need to take a comprehensive approach at what we look at for reducing taxes and providing a fair process for taxation in this state.
Mr. Doden.
Well, right now the General Assembly is studying, you know, how we can properly reduce in a responsible way the income tax. But the most important thing I hear from voters all over the state of Indiana, especially our seniors, is property taxes and the fact that our seniors are at risk of losing their homes because of the rising cost of property taxes, and that's just wrong. That's why we're proposing that we'll freeze property taxes for seniors, giving them surety, and then make sure that we reduce the rate of growth. And that we'll have to work with the General Assembly, but that's what we're going to focus on.
All right. Since you have been, the suggestion is you have unleashed a gimmick here on Hoosier voters. Let's give you at least 15 seconds to answer those accusations.
Well, I'm talking about a tax cut, not a tax replacement. And if my opponents understood the legislative process, they would also understand that it can end for certain Hoosiers. And in addition to that, we also have to understand that it's not going to happen overnight. And by the way, we've been phasing it in. We were at 3.4%. Today we're at 3.1%. In 2027, we're going to 2.9%. Let's just keep going that direction. When we have excess surplus in revenues, put it towards eliminating the income tax. We can get there, helping Hoosiers, small businesses, attracting people to Indiana.
All right. And I'm not here to represent Mike Braun, but I will just say I've heard enough of his talking points at the debates. When we talk about the CARES Act, he said every member of Congress essentially voted for that. And for as far as the infrastructure,
well, that
the
makes gas. Him a follower, not a leader.
Well, the gas with good company. And he would point out that on the notion of the gas tax, it was important to keep the crossroads of America, the crossroads of America in terms
of. For not speaking for Mike Braun, you're doing a pretty good job of it.
Well, that's the. Earned applause. That's good. All right. Let's before, and this goes to you, Ms. Rittenour, before we leave the subject of taxes, many voters submitted questions to the debate commission asking about rising property taxes. One, a resident of Brownsburg, asks, considering the way house values have skyrocketed over the last few years and the resulting increases in property taxes, what are you going to do to protect homeowners? And you'll have a minute.
Hoosiers, this is a really difficult question. And the reason for that is because whenever you're talking about taxes, you need to have that conversation, not just at the state level, but at the local level. On May 8th, my intention is to go to all 92 counties to talk to the county commissioners and to have a real conversation about lowering your property taxes. What we know is that right now there are a lot of referendums that are coming from the schools. We love our schools. We want to support our teachers. We want our teachers to get paid well. But we are growing and expanding our schools at a rate that is not able to be kept up by the property tax owner. This is very concerning in the state of Indiana, $37,000 median income, $68,000 per household. We think that that's probably over the actual numbers. So right now what we need to do is we need to have a conversation at the county level, which I'm going to do. This is not a gimmick, and I would really exhort you to think about who is running for governor and what they're doing with your money, because somebody lost $1 billion on the stage, and that probably also should be a concern.
Stop you right there. All right, Mr. Chambers, 30 seconds to answer the question.
Well, lower taxes is always the goal. I do believe property taxes need to be addressed. I would look at the assessments. They're different from county to county. People don't understand them. So simplify the assessment process and make them uniform across the state to the extent we can do that. Create consistency and understanding for people and create some opportunities for seniors not to get kicked out of their house and have portability of the built-in gains they have. Listen, Suzanne Crouch and Mike Braun, in their 50 years of combined service, public service, have raised taxes 50 times, and it's she's not credible on cutting taxes with specifically 7 times cutting taxes in her term as legislature in the legislature. So, property taxes need to be focused on. I have a plan for it, and it is a priority.
Hard to squeeze 50 years into 15 seconds, but let's try to stick to that, Mr. Sir. Hill.
You ready for me?
Yes, please. Go ahead. 30 seconds, I should say.
Property tax is certainly a concern by a lot of people, but depending on where you go, so are income taxes and so are sales tax. We need to have a comprehensive approach. This isn't a gimmick. It's not a solution, a quick fix. We need to have a long-term plan for how to move forward. The problem is with the assessed values. The assessed values in every community are different. We need to work a strategy where the state works with the locals to come up with a good program so that we can manage our property taxes in an efficient, fair way, particularly as it pertains to young people and seniors.
Mr. Doden, what are you going to do about property taxes?
Yeah, that's exactly the foundation of our plan. So what we've seen is growth of property taxes by 15% a year, in some cases multiple years in a row. And that is very hard to plan for if you're on a fixed income. That's why we're proposing that we'd freeze it for seniors, but we'd also, basically the growth would only be allowed to be about 5% a year under our plan, which makes it easier for people in their budgets to plan. So that is the foundation of our plan for how we help people with property tax issue that's raging right now across the state.
And Ms. Crouch.
You know, as a state representative, I voted for the largest property tax cut in our state's history, and I'm certainly open to that. And my opponents are entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And as a state representative, I cut taxes a dozen times, and that's why I want to continue to cut taxes and eliminate the state income tax, putting money into your pockets, helping small businesses grow, attracting people to Indiana.
All right. We are going to give those arms another chance to flex. Not to the point you need Tommy John surgery or anything, but we're going to see if we can, again, rest the vocal cords and maybe go with this. So more rapid-fire questions, if you want to call them that. And we're going to, these all deal, this next section, with election integrity, which has been certainly a persistent issue nationwide. And in recent years, so we've seen that come to the fore many times. And the candidate who is likely to be at the top of Hoosiers' ballots on the Republican side, Donald Trump, certainly has weighed in quite a bit on the issue of what he sees as a lack of election integrity. So, show of hands, raise your hands if you are confident in the integrity of Indiana's elections. All right, we have Mr. Chambers, Mr. Hill, Mr. Doden, Ms. Crouch are all confident in the integrity of our elections, leaving Ms. Rittenour. That's one way to get 15 seconds. Go for it. Why are you not confident in our election integrity?
Well, I'll tell you, in order for me to be confident in our election integrity, I really want to see more involving voters. And I can tell you that it is the hardest thing in the world to get on the ballot. Getting the signatures is very difficult to do. I can also tell you that all around the state, many people don't even know that it's time to vote right now. I think our Secretary of State was actually out of the country. Right. So I just think it's wise for us to be paying attention to how much attention is going on the voting process before we give it a rating.
Let's try one more. Again, show of hands. A significant number of Republicans in Indiana, certainly, and elsewhere, agree with President Trump's claim that the 2020 election was stolen. Raise your hand if you agree that the election was stolen.
That question cannot be answered yes or no.
That is
not a yes or no question.
That's funny because I asked it as a yes or no question.
Well, it involves facts.
Let me reframe it, Counselor. Counselor, is Joe Biden the duly elected president of the United States?
Yes.
All right. Anybody disagree? Very good.
Wait, I just want to make a statement because I just think that's an unfair question. Let's just be very clear. What happened in the 2020 election that everybody should agree on is that it wasn't properly adjudicated. So they should have spent more time investigating that election, and it wasn't it was not investigated.
Next question.
So that's an unfair question.
I think we know where you come down. No, listen. Raise your. All right.
Anomalies in that election. I went to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning with President Trump winning, and woke up in the morning and he was losing. There are anomalies that we can't understand. We don't know about. So we cannot answer.
I'll just say for a question that's impossible to answer, you just answered it. So next try again. Raise your hand. Well, you did. Raise your hand if you will recognize the results of the November election for president, regardless of the outcome. Raise your hand if you will recognize the outcome of the presidential election in November.
We're not going to. You're asking us to say something that hasn't even happened yet. We plan on governing the state of Indiana. We would like to base that on facts.
Well, I'm just saying that's a departure from convention. Oftentimes, those seeking the highest office in the state of Indiana who do subscribe to the notion that our elections are sound and a pillar of democracy would commit to agreeing with the outcome of the presidential contest.
But what we're saying is that there's no way for us to know what happens between now and then. And so for us to go out and say a country that is sought after by many places all over the world, we could be under.
Let's try one more. Let's try this one.
We can't.
Let's try this one.
We're irresponsible.
All right. We're going to try this one.
And we can't speak for the issues of Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, what's going on in those states.
All right.
Those states have
Let's
problems.
Try this one. This one you can address, I think. Senator Braun, who again is not here this evening, received Donald Trump's endorsement for the governor. How many of you would have welcomed President Trump's endorsement?
Why wouldn't we? Maybe that's a better question.
Yes or no. Yeah, I'm not here to tell you whether you should or shouldn't. I'm just asking you the question. You all would have...
It seems like you're really trying to set us up and cause division in our party, and we don't appreciate it.
Ms. Rittenour, I think the party is doing quite capably on its own, creating some division.
We're focused on division
right.
for the people of Indiana.
All right.
Who's endorsing us?
We're going to move on to the next open-ended question. This goes to Mr. Hill. I do appreciate the vigor, by the way. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in a case that could decide whether government can criminalize homelessness. Do you support laws ticketing or arresting people who sleep outdoors in public spaces? I'll give you a minute to respond to that, Mr. Hill.
I support communities having laws that prohibit camping and participating in the public in areas of housing. I think that communities can move homelessness, and homelessness is an issue that's not about homelessness or housing as much as it is about mental illness and drug addiction. So we need to be able to provide shelters for people who require shelters, but we also need to make sure that we remove dangerous situations from our streets. And people living in the streets is bad for them, it's bad for the rest of us, and I support communities being able to eradicate that process with compassion, but doing so in a manner that keeps us safe and clean and our communities open.
All right, Mr. Doden, before you do, let me just say, I appreciate your enthusiasm for the various candidates, but it takes away from the time that we have for the questions, so please be mindful of that. Mr. Doden.
Well, this is at the heart of our capital zone proposal, where we want to have people feel safe and be safe in our downtown Indianapolis, where we've invested a lot of money as taxpayers. But we also want to make sure we have resources to help people overcome addiction and be restored to their families, be restored to their community. And we're going to work with the private sector and local 501c3s to make sure that we have the resources to help people overcome their addiction. And that's going to be an important part of what I do as governor in the state of Indiana.
Ms. Crouch, should government have the opportunity to arrest or ticket the homeless?
You know, the bigger issue here is mental illness and addiction, and I'm the only candidate that says it'll be a top priority for me. We've seen a 20% increase in anxiety and depression among our population since COVID, but a 60% increase among young people. They are the future of Indiana. Suicide's the second leading cause of death among young people, and many of our homeless, in fact, I would dare say most of our homeless people, struggle with mental illness and addiction. That's the bigger issue we should be talking about and addressing.
Ms. Rittenour.
Indiana, you are a good state. And you recognize what's taking place right now. In our state, we care about our military veterans, which are oftentimes homeless. We are certainly a state that believes in law and order. There's definitely a candidate missing from the stage that did not support the police. But I support the police and I support law and order. But for our homeless issues, we definitely want to be those that are going and working with the already organizations all over our state that are caring for people, that are in that state of mind. I also don't believe the government should be involved in the mental illness conversation. And I think that you should be asking yourself, if the government did what they did to you during COVID, what exactly are they going to be doing with people that have mental illness?
All right, Mr. Chambers.
I seem to be the only candidate that's talking about economic opportunity and growing our economy, lifting people up through higher wages and full employment. I think that's where a lot of this mental illness starts, is lack of economic opportunity. Let's just start there. Number one, our Protect and Serve plan, our policy that we rolled out on public safety, addresses bringing back behavioral health centers, because our police officers, our firefighters are our mental health professionals today, and they didn't sign up for that. We closed those facilities 30 years ago. We need to refund those behavioral health centers, number one, and we need to talk about and really focus on repeat and violent offenders, not ticketing homeless people. Let's get the repeat and violent offenders off the streets and deal with our bail system.
All right. And thank you all. And again, I would ask that you refrain from applause. You can smother them with hugs and kisses as soon as this is over and have pep rallies should you desire. But back to the questions at hand, and this goes to Mr. Doden. Why are school test scores and graduation rates stagnating in Indiana? What innovative ideas do you have to change that and make improvements? 1 minute, please.
Yeah, well, we have a constitutional obligation and a moral obligation to do the best job we can to educate our kids. And that's why I'm for parental choice. I think it's been very good for us to give parents choice. Every kid is different. We had different kids in our family that had different needs. That's why I'm a big fan of vouchers and competition. Even our public school administrators will tell me behind closed doors that this has helped make them better. But we also have a teacher investment program. We're going to invest in our teachers. We have a teacher crisis, especially in our small towns. And this teacher investment program goes right to the teachers. It's their income tax and property tax free. It's about a $5,000 pay raise for the average teacher. And then we're going to fund early childhood education. We have $1 billion coming due from good fiscal management. We put a stake in the ground and said it is just inappropriate for us to even allow or think about that we get people to the third grade, kids to the third grade, and can't read. Let's solve that earlier, and let's make sure that we invest in the future of our kids. That's one of the most important things that we'll do.
Ms. Crouch.
I want to create a lifetime education system focused on four R's: reading, writing, arithmetic, and reasoning. We will teach our children how to think, not what to think. And I want to take the five agencies that deal with education and workforce training and put them into one, where now everyone's on the same page, the same software system, focused on making sure that our children are prepared for that next step upon graduation, whether it's enlistment, employment, enrollment, or apprenticeship.
Ms. Rittenour?
Indiana, there's an educational crisis taking place in this state. Nobody's been talking about it for the last 2.5 years, but I have. I've selected as my head of education Paige Miller. She has 30 years experience in the classroom and her master's in administration. K through 5, we're going to restore the focus on academics, unlike what was set up here on stage. There is a heavy focus on CRT and SEL that is taking up classroom time. We want to make sure that we bring trade back in our 7th and 8th grade. We want to bring in the private sector to talk to our 6th graders about how technology and AI is affecting their profession. We are ready to step up and become the training capital of the United States of America. That is who Hoosiers are. That is Indiana goodness.
All right. Mr. Chambers, your education strategy. Yeah,
thank you. This is our biggest challenge and our biggest opportunity. Our educational system is very backwards looking. It needs to be pointed forward into a modern economy, teaching kids to be ready for a modern economy. 20% of our kids can't read going in from third grade to fourth grade. We have a literacy problem in 2024 in Indiana. That's unacceptable. 65% of our kids can't pass an iLearn math test graduating sixth grade. That's unacceptable. We are not preparing our kids for economic prosperity in the future. We need to make education individualized to the kid. Kids learn differently today than they did 20 or 30 years ago. We need to make sure that our educational system is parent-centered. We're focused on trades in seventh grade, and we need to get more money to teachers and less to buildings and administrative costs.
Mr. Hill.
We need to have an education system that's free of federal entanglements. And while I support choice and vouchers, the reality is we don't have much of a choice when our options are some of the failing schools that we have in the state of Indiana. We need to make sure that we go back to the basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic. And we need to add civics. And we need to have high academic standards as we're moving forward. My wife is a teacher. My five children were products of public education. We understand what's necessary. We need to have parental responsibility along with parental rights in terms of education so that we have partnership between teachers and parents moving their children's education forward.
If I may just follow up, when you're talking about entanglements, and I know you've used that phrase at most of the debates that where you all have met, are you suggesting you would not take federal funding?
I would urge local schools to quit taking the federal dollars that are tied with federal programs, et cetera. The federal government acts like a crack dealer. They dangle money out in front of you, and then you have to ride their programs. I asked the superintendent once, how much of your budget is federal dollars, and he said 7%. How much of what you do is pertaining to maintaining or attracting that 7%? Over 50% of what they do is tied to those federal dollars. If we get rid of the federal dollars, local schools have the ability to direct their own ability moving forward with their own educational programs.
Anybody else think that the federal government's an educational crack dealer? Ms. Rittenour.
Yes, the federal government, the Department of Education, is constantly dipping its hands into the state, and then we're obligated to do whatever they're asking us to do, which in this case is programs like CRT and SEL. But we also want to take into consideration that as everyone up on stage who has worked currently with the current administration is complaining about our scores, they were focused on the IEDC, why our children were failing in school. That is unacceptable.
Does anyone else want to weigh in on federal education? Ms. Croucher.
Yeah, I don't think we should take money, federal money, that has strings attached that run contrary to who we are and what we believe in as Hoosiers. And so as governor, I'll make sure that my Department of Education and Superintendent of Public Instruction does not take that kind of money that has the strings attached that puts us in a direction that is different from our values and what we believe.
In fairness, anyone else want to weigh in? All right. Let's move on to the next question. This is for Ms. Crouch. As you pointed out, you have served in both the executive and legislative branches. Certainly, you held office at the county level as well. And you've headed several agencies in your role as lieutenant governor. At the same time, you've said there's room to make government more efficient. We've talked a lot about audits and so forth. Can you name one state agency that you would downsize or eliminate and tell us why?
Just about all of them.
Elimination or downsizing?
Both. You know, one of the things that we want to do is totally modernize.
You won't be governor over much of a, if you do all of them.
Want to totally modernize state government. Being able to take our 100 boards, agencies, and commissions and get them down to a more manageable size. But we want to remove rules and regulations that add to the cost of doing business and don't make sense. And then in addition to that, we want to have outside independent audits so we can determine how we can do a better job and how we can do it more cost effectively and efficiently. We will realize cost savings that then we can put towards new programs. We aren't the only state doing this. Iowa is doing this. And they have projected with their reorganization of their state government, they will realize $215 million of savings over 4 years. We are five times the size of Iowa. So yes, we modernize, we totally reorganize, we will realize cost savings that then can be put towards new programs and new services for Hoosiers and give you your money back.
All right, Ms. Rittenour.
One of the programs that, one of the departments that we would be decentralizing is the Department of Equity and Inclusion, the DEI. What we would like to do is we'd like to decentralize that and put that in all of our very small towns all over the state of Indiana that really want to be included. And we would like to change then that name to a better citizen because we want to have a focus in our state on our Constitution and how the many immigrants that have come here lawfully need to be studying that Constitution, not to mention those that are here that are not legal, which we probably should also talk about at some point in time. But we want to definitely be those that are shrinking government, not expanding government. And so again, Hoosiers, if you want a politician, there's everybody on the left end of the stage. If you want a person for the people, I'm running for governor and I ask for your vote.
Mr. Chambers, anything you would want to eliminate or downsize?
John, I've been reinventing business for a living for 40 years. I've been building a company and reshaping it and building a team and addressing the challenges of an ever-changing marketplace. Suzanne Crouch, she ran the housing agency and she ran OCRA and she didn't do a thing. It's been the same agency. It hasn't produced any more housing units. It hasn't had any more efficiency. So she's talking about things she's going to do, but she hasn't done the things that's right on her plate within her portfolio now. I mean, come on. You need a CEO in this state. We need somebody to run things like a business, to shrink government, to get regulation out of people's lives. That's going to take someone from outside government. It's not going to take a legislator to do that.
Ms. Crouch, I will get to you, but let's stick with the order here, Mr. Hill. Agencies you would like to downsize?
Well, I appreciate Jamie's decentralization of DEI, but I'm going to get rid of it altogether on day one. We need to eliminate the diversity, equity, inclusion in our state government. Diversity is a wonderful thing, but not at the cost of excellence. Inclusion is a wonderful thing, but not at the cost of competence. And equity is a wonderful thing, but not at the cost of fairness. And along with that, we're going to take a good look at the Indiana Department of Education. There's over 250 staffers making a lot of money at the Department of Education, and you still got third graders who can't read. How about cutting that in half? We're going to get started with that as one example.
Mr. Doden, any agencies you see fit to pare back or eliminate?
Yeah, I've talked about this over the last 3 years. One of the most important things the governor does is hire the 30 agency heads that employ 30,000 people, spend $22 billion of state money and $22 billion of federal money. And I'm the only candidate on the stage that has said every agency head will have to reapply for their job. What we've been doing is collecting talent and names of people who are willing to come in and serve. Our experts suggest that there's about 15% of waste right now that we can get out of the system, and that's going to be the focus of my administration, bringing the most talented people to bear to make sure that these agencies serve the people of Indiana.
Ms. Crouch, the suggestion was that you didn't do enough to create ample affordable housing. Would you like to respond?
As Lieutenant Governor, I have more responsibilities and duties than any other Lieutenant Governor in the country. I head up four agencies. I head up Secretary of Agriculture and Rural Development. I head up the Housing Community Development Association. I also head up the Office of Community and Rural Affairs, Indiana Destination Development Corporation. All of those agencies have been focused on how to make Indiana grow, how to create more housing units, particularly for those that are vulnerable, those with disabilities, homeless veterans, 2,700 units that have been added, first-time home buyers assistance, $2 billion investment in Main Streets. I stand on my record. We have been doing a good job to be able to help Hoosiers, and we're going to continue to do that when we eliminate the state income tax and put a focus on those struggling with mental illness and addiction.
Ms. Rittenour, I'll give you 15 seconds.
Yes, I just want to point out to Hoosiers that this is the debate, right? Because we are actually talking about a conversation about socialism. It just doesn't look like that. We have to decide in the state of Indiana, are we conservatives or are we not conservatives? If we're conservatives, we believe in less government, not all of these departments expanding and expanding to solve more and more problems in our communities. We actually believe the private sector should step in and solve the problems, not the government. And when you elect people that believe the government is the answer, you get bigger government and more taxes.
All right. We're about to hit the hour mark, and we'll be bidding farewell to some of our broadcast partners. Anybody 15 seconds on this notion of housing, and anybody want to weigh in on that? By the time I look at you, and my 15 seconds will be up. All right. Well, what we will do is this. We are going to pause for a moment, as I said, to wish some of our broadcast audience farewell as some of the TV and radio stations move on to other programming. The final 30 minutes, don't go anywhere, the final 30 minutes of the Indiana Debate Commission's GOP gubernatorial primary debate can be found online via the websites of media outlets across the state or at IndianaDebateCommission.com. A recording of the full debate will also be available shortly after this is finished. And we'd also like to take this moment to thank our supporters.
Indiana Broadcasters Association, the Indiana State Bar Association, AARP, and the following.
All right, back where we left off with another question, open-ended question, a one-minute response if you would like to take it. This goes to Ms. Rittenour. Indiana has an abortion law that bans most abortions from day one of pregnancy and only allows termination up to 10 weeks in cases of rape or incest, up to 20 weeks in the case of fatal fetal anomaly, or in cases where the pregnant individual's physical health or life is at risk. Do you support current statute in Indiana, or does the ban go too far or not far enough in your mind? 1 minute.
Hoosiers, I'm for life. The reason I'm for life is because I believe in the creator of life. I also believe in a concept that I know is one that you know. You reap what you sow. If you sow life, you'll reap life. Right now in the state of Indiana, we have put exceptions when it comes to abortion. And I'm not talking about the exceptions that are made, which really aren't exceptions. They're more medical decisions between two patients, the mother and the baby. I'm not talking about those scenarios. But we've made exceptions if you look and see how many abortions took place in 2023 in the gestation age, you will see that it was higher than prior years. We need to be a state that says we are for life, because we are in a conversation right now in our country about how our future is going to end up. And if we want to be a country that is for goodness, we need to be a country that supports life from the very beginning all the way to the end. And so I am a candidate, a governor candidate, that is more than willing and oh so ready to have that conversation with Jennifer McCormick. I know that she's been courting governor candidates right now to do that, but we'll have that conversation after May 7th.
Thank you. Mr. Chambers, is the law currently in Indiana where it should be in your view, or too stringent or not stringent enough?
I'm pro-life. I believe the exceptions are important, but what I hear from Hoosiers going around the state is about property taxes. I hear about quality of life issues. I hear about education and healthcare issues and creating an economy to lift people up, to grow families, and that's where my focus would be.
Mr. Hill.
Well, I brought 2,411 aborted babies back from Illinois to have them buried in Indiana to establish their humanity. And our statutes are fine until we don't enforce them. And we have a problem right now with TPRs. Terminated pregnancy reports are not being filed by the health department, and the governor, the current governor and the administration are not supporting that. As governor, I will direct the health department to file for public notice the termination from pregnancy reports to make sure that we can enforce our abortion ban. It's no good to us if we can't enforce it, and that's what's happening currently.
Ms. Crouch.
I am pro-life.
Do you want me to go before?
I'm sorry.
Do you want me to speak for Eric?
Unintentional. No, no, no.
Look, I've been clear on this topic from day one. I'm ardently pro-life. It's a human rights issue, and it's a religious issue for me. And I think that I was really proud of our General Assembly for passing a pro-life law right away, as soon as they could. The law, I think, is settled, and that's why we're focused on things like zero-cost adoption that allows our 13,000 kids in foster care to get in loving homes, and that allows us to strengthen the family. And these are issues that everyone's getting behind. People are excited about. One of the most important things that we can do is strengthen the family and make sure that we have strong families, and that's what we're going to focus on.
Now, Ms. Crouch.
I am pro-life. My record is clear. And I cast a tie-breaking vote to strengthen Indiana's abortion laws. And today, Indiana's one of the most pro-life states in the country. But it's equally important that we protect and save life and support those mothers and those babies. And it's why I am so proud that we have dedicated $45 million to supporting pregnant women, to supporting mothers, and to supporting those children up to 2 years of age, to be able to give them the kind of support that indicates that we protect, but we also support life at all stages.
Let's stay with this subject for a moment, and maybe we can address your questions in this one. All five members of the current Indiana Supreme Court were appointed by Republican governors. In handing down that court's decision on Indiana's abortion law, which, as you pointed out, was one of the first and most stringent in the country, a majority of those members of the court found that Article 1, Section 1 of Indiana's Constitution does give women the right to, in cases of threat to their life and physical well-being, to, in fact, they have a right to abortion. As far as I know, that's the first time the court has staked out that particular position. Did that court, do you agree or disagree with that court? Let's do this starting with a show of hands, and I know several of you other. Do you agree with the five members of the Supreme Court, a majority of whom said that women have this right under certain circumstances when they're facing death or significant physical harm under Article 1, Section 1 of the Indiana Constitution? How many agree with the majority of the Indiana Supreme Court?
I just think this is very difficult because, as everybody knows, with court opinions, they're very individual per case. I don't know if that was a case precedent that they're now setting. I have no idea the circumstances of the specific person that brought that case forward. But I think that what we have said is that a mom and a baby, whenever they are approached in a situation that is difficult for the mother's life, it's the baby and the mother's life that's at stake there. And I would support the doctor making a decision for both. So I don't know really where that puts me with your question.
Well, the question simply was, did the five members of the Supreme Court or the majority of those get it right? Nobody raised the hand that said they thought they got it right, correct? Okay.
Well, I just want to say something else. I'm so sorry, because this is actually a really big issue on the conservative platform, and we don't tend to talk about it very much, which is concerning. SCOTUS, whenever they put their opinion together after Roe v. Wade, it was a phenomenal opinion. Every conservative should read it. They essentially said that it needs to go back to the states, that when Roe v. Wade was declared way back when, that it wasn't done in a manner that was fitting. They actually talked about how at the time there was no case precedent, and that they should have looked out at the states at the time that Roe v. Wade took place.
Right.
If they had done that, they would have seen the states did not want abortion.
All right. Let's stick at the risk of dwelling on this. This is an important issue. You correctly pointed out this is a subject important to conservatives and progressives alike. Let's start this open-ended question, related but unrelated, and I guess we will start with Mr. Chambers then. Most of you in previous debates have indicated support for in vitro fertilization or IVF. How do you reconcile your pro-life views with the fact that typically in order to create life using IVF, you generally have to destroy embryos because the process creates embryos that simply aren't going to be used. Is that tough to reconcile? Let's start with you, Mr. Chambers.
First and foremost, I mean, the joy of my life has been my 28-year-old son, and I want that joy to be spread to all Hoosiers. And so I do support IVF and want it to be available to as many Hoosiers as can possibly be to grow their families, period.
Let's just go right down the line. 30 seconds.
I believe in a culture of life, and along with that culture of life is the opportunity for couples, loving couples who want to have children, who are not able to have children, to participate in an in vitro process. I support that moving forward. And on top of that, I want to support enforcement of our abortion ban. And what I would want to know from all of my opponents, are you willing to step up to the plate and enforce the TPRs, making sure that the health department is providing TPRs so that we can enforce the abortion? I'd like to know that, because so far I'm the only candidate that has spoken out that says we will enforce the terminated pregnancy reports to make sure that we can enforce the law.
Mr. Doden.
Yeah, so we're gonna work with the General Assembly to protect IVF. I mean, we want families to grow. We want strong families, and that's an important part of what we're going to do. I also will make sure that all of our agencies follow the law and report what they're supposed to report in a timely fashion. That's going to be a really important part of my administration, and we've made that clear.
Ms. Crouch.
You know, I am pro-life. My record's clear. But as a woman and as a mother, I cannot fathom the pain that a couple or a mother goes through who wants, or woman goes through, who wants so desperately to have a baby and hasn't been able to have it. So we have to wrap our arms around these women, and we have to support them and support life and give them the right to be able to bring children into this world.
All right. Ms. Rittner.
I'm a firm believer in life, and I think everyone should have the opportunity to have life. I also think that it's interesting that we are talking about this specifically, noting that there's a lot of aborted fetuses that take place that are put in vaccines, and we haven't talked about that at all. And yet we are in a state that was recommending, and really even people are losing their jobs for not getting those vaccines. I would also just want to point out, to answer Curtis Hill's question, yes, I would absolutely support the transparency that we're looking for with these abortion reports. And I would further say that we are five candidates that are running for governor in the state of Indiana on the conservative ticket. And I think it's very fair for us to say to Governor Holcomb, we are all asking you together to support transparency and get those reports to the people.
All right. Now, those reports traditionally have been under Indiana statute, as I understand it, because they contain medical information have been redacted.
That's
by the Department of Health.
I was the Attorney General in this state. They were not medical records before. They're not medical records now. Any information able to identify someone has been taken out of the program, so get your facts straight.
My facts are merely that the DOA, the Department of Health, had in fact been redacting that information. So if you have a concern, take it up with them. Mr. Chambers, different question. In what ways do you believe immigration at the southern border is affecting Indiana? A Lafayette resident wants to know, would candidates support cracking down on Hoosier businesses that employ undocumented immigrants?
The border is a huge challenge, the Biden border, I call it. And if Senator Broaden wasn't in Biden's basement tonight, and he's here on the stage, we talk about his failure to put up legislation to lead on anything related to the border, except going down and taking taxpayer funded photo ops at the border. It's a challenge. A broken border, the front door's closed, the back door's flapping wide open. It's now a state problem. And so I would wear out my welcome in D.C., making sure that they understand this is now putting our guardsmen at risk. Our guardsmen at risk, Senator Braun and Biden are putting our guardsmen at risk because they're doing nothing about it. We have a fentanyl problem because of a broken border. So Hoosier lives, and then you have criminals coming into our state. Hoosier lives are at risk because of D.C.'s failure. It needs to be addressed, and a governor needs to be strong on this issue, not just send guards down and fund it. We need to advocate for a strong border at a state level.
Mr. Hill, would you support cracking down on Hoosier businesses that employ undocumented workers?
Absolutely. Immigration is not supposed to be a state issue, but it has to be because the federal government and Senator Braun has abdicated their responsibility to making that happen. So we need to send that the patrol down to the border. I called for the National Guard, the Indiana National Guard, to go down to the state of Texas before Governor Holcomb put that forward. But step two is no safe haven for illegal aliens in the state of Indiana. No sanctuary cities, no businesses that under the excuse of we need labor, we're going to hire just about anybody. We can't have it both ways. We're either going to stop illegal immigration or we're going to lay down for it. I'm not laying down for anybody.
Mr. Duggan.
Biden needs to do his job. Congress needs to do their job. And as your governor, we're going to wake up every day working hard to embarrass the federal government into better performance. That's what I can tell you we're going to do. Now, in the meantime, when they're not doing their job, then it's incumbent on us to support our governors at the border. That's why I've said we will send the National Guard to the border to help protect the border, support our governors. We're going to support our law enforcement. Rule of law is the foundation to this country, and we simply must follow the rule of law.
Ms. Crouch.
Due to the failed policies of the Biden administration, we now have 9 million illegals in this country. And last year alone, we stopped almost 200 people at the border on the terrorist watch list. Every state is a border state, including Indiana. And so as governor, I will send National Guard down to help protect our southern borders. But I also will protect Indiana's borders, making sure that we don't get that influx of illegals that bring the deadly fentanyl, that also bring human trafficking. It's absolutely incumbent that we keep Indiana strong. That's why in 2011, as a state representative, I voted to prohibit sanctuary cities in Indiana. As governor, if they come here, we'll send them to sanctuary cities in other states.
Ms. Rittenour.
Yes, I would just say, as Curtis was just saying, that there are illegal immigrants that are already here in the state of Indiana. And so what you have in Indiana is you have a very intense situation that's taken place because of a lack of leadership, and even, you could say, a president that was promoting illegal immigration. We do need to have a stop of illegal immigration at the border. Why any governors would be participating in an administrative solution from a logistical standpoint without actually stopping what's taking place there seems like it wouldn't make any kind of sense. But I would also say that I think the Conservative Party needs to support everyone that's waited lawfully to come in and do a fast track to citizenship for all of the immigrants that have waited lawfully. We need to be a Conservative Party that is shining the light on that kind of immigration. And then we also need to address the many that are here right now. Taking all of those people and putting them back at the border, to me, seems like a logistical nightmare. I think that we need to have some kind of pause, some kind of temporary situation where those people are not citizens but are able to get some kind of a certificate so that they can work here in the state of Indiana and pay taxes.
All right. This follow-up question of sorts, and we'll probably just want to do this with a show of hands initially. The Heritage Foundation, conservative think tank, this month proposed that states should charge tuition, essentially, of the undocumented children, or the parents, certainly the children of undocumented immigrants, children who were not born here, essentially public school tuition for grades K through 12. Do you think that makes sense, the Heritage Foundation's proposal to, they argue that this is a burden in some states more than others in terms of providing this kind of education? where do you all stand? If you agree with the Heritage Foundation that schools should, in fact, charge tuition of undocumented workers at kindergarten through 12, we've had much more discussion, certainly as a nation, about higher education. But what about, all right.
So John, if I can...
If you would give us more time to answer the questions, we will. I mean, you're really kind of pigeonholing us a little bit, and these are really tough situations.
Listen, Americans are tired of illegal immigrants coming across our border. Hoosiers are tired of immigrants coming across the border. 7 million in the last count. And so we need to enforce our laws. We need to fix our border. Our senator needs to do his job, which he's not doing. So I don't, like she said, I don't think I haven't read the Heritage.
All right, fair enough. Mr. Hill.
I don't know what the question was, but I think what you're getting at is, no, I'm serious. I think what you're getting at is do we want to have, do we think that we want to charge illegals to be educated? And the answer is no. I don't want to have a system where illegals are able to buy their way into our citizenship, or into our freedoms, into our rights. If you are here illegally, there's no price you can pay to gain access to what's ours. That's worth protecting.
Anybody else want to weigh in on the question that I apparently wasn't clear about? Should kids be charged tuition if they're undocumented?
Well, again, I was just saying that one of the things that I suggested is that we should have a way for people to pay taxes and not be citizens. There is a major problem here that our Constitution does not actually address, because we have a president that was being irresponsible and even hurting our nation by leaving the borders open. So we really do need to come to the table with strong governors that can come together and, with the strength of the states, come up with a logistical, administrative solution that will be good for all of the citizens of the state of Indiana and their states as well.
All right. We are almost to essentially closing statements, final question, but I do want to try this arm thrust one more time. And this I think we can get this one. Mask mandates should be banned in public schools in case of another pandemic. If you agree, raise your hands. I just wanted to see if the microphone was working. All right. With that, we have come to the close, essentially, of this, the final debate. You will each have 2 minutes to address anything that we left on the table tonight, or make your final pitch to Hoosier voters. And let's make it simple. Mr. Chambers, go ahead.
Thank you for being here. What a journey. A lot of firsts in the Chambers family in the last 7 months. I've never done this before. I'm not a politician. I'm certainly not a career politician. What I am is a grateful Hoosier. I started a company from nothing 40 years ago. And I felt the pains of starting a business from nothing. I worried about payroll and putting food on the table and gas in the car. It was a tough journey, but I'm grateful. And because of that, this is a service opportunity for me, not a career change. I believe in the potential of this state. I serve for a dollar a year, for 2 years, to grow our economy, to bring a business-like approach, to have optimism and urgency, to build a great team, to raise wages, to do things that hadn't been done, to go win. You know, and we weren't winning in a way that was leaving people behind. Wages matter. Being below U.S. average wage matters. And so we have to go play to win, because then when you have a growing economy, you can fix education and government can actually shrink, because unemployment goes down, Medicaid use goes down. So listen, with faith and courage, my wife and I decided to get into this race 7 months ago. We believe it's time for a CEO, someone to run it like a business. I was in Bedford over the weekend, Saturday night, and a man came up to me and said, "I just voted for you." And it gave me a shot down my spine. I was so humbled by that decision, because I'm working hard to earn votes. I'm rolling out policy. I'm doing the work, going around, meeting Hoosiers, listening, because that's what CEOs do. You have our senior senator who doesn't show up. He doesn't listen. He mails it in. He expects people to vote for them. I don't. I'm honored by a vote. And that's what I've been working to do, is earn your vote. And then I'll work hard to deliver on that effort and make Indiana better than it has ever been. So thank you. I would appreciate your support on May 7th.
Mr. Hill, your closing thoughts.
I'm running for governor because Hoosiers are hungry for proven conservative leadership. And the most important word that I've said there is proven leadership. How do you know? How do you know what someone's going to do going forward? It's based on their history and record of what they've done in the past. We're facing assaults on absolute truth on a regular basis. The manipulation of justice, the weaponization of race designed to keep you silent, and the sexualization of our children is destroying the America that we know and love. Don't let politicians give you a laundry list of conservative talking points and say that's enough. Prove that you can do the job. I believe in a culture of life. That's why when 2,411 Indiana aborted babies were found discovered in that Illinois garage, I didn't let it go. As your attorney general, I went and brought them back to establish their humanity in death that was denied them in life, because I believe in a culture of life. I believe in liberty, freedom. That's why when the Holcomb Crouch administration announced its mask mandate in 2020, as your attorney general, I put a stop to it. It's about freedom. It's about liberty. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe in truth. That's why when the Bureau of Motor Vehicles created a third gender, I put a stop to it as Attorney General. Why? Because the truth is there are only two genders, male and female, and that's worth fighting for. We need courage. We need to be able to, you need to be able to count on the people that are on this stage, the person on the stage that will get the job done. My name is Curtis Hill. I have a record of getting the job done. I would appreciate your support on May 7.
Mr. Doden.
I think what's important for a leader is to have a bold vision for the people of Indiana and the ability to implement that vision. And we have more plans in writing than everyone on this stage combined. So what I'd encourage you to do is go to our website and interface with every one of our plans, help us improve them. But let me go through them quickly. We have a plan to restore small towns for the first time ever in history. We've never had a plan for the 2.5 million people that live in small town Indiana. And it's at the core of our very culture in Indiana, and is at the core of business growth and everything that we should be about in this state. We have a plan for each of our regions to be one of the top in the country. You know, we took Fort Wayne from not ranked in 2015, built a team, and today it's the 32nd best place to live in the United States, according to U.S. News and World Report. We did that under 7 years. We can do that all over the state. We have a plan for zero-cost adoption to get our 13,000 kids in foster care and loving homes. We have a plan to protect our seniors, making sure that they do not lose their homes by freezing property taxes. You know, we have a plan to make sure that we grow every single part of our economy in all 92 counties. These are the kinds of things that you should be looking for. But as I close tonight, I'm going to ask you for some things. First of all, I'm going to make one observation, and I've said this across the state. Fear and faith are incompatible. And there's a lot of fear right now in politics, a lot of fear. And fear and faith are incompatible. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of what? Power, love, and a sound mind. So what I'm going to ask of you is to roll up your sleeves and put your faith to work. It's going to take a team effort from everyone in this room. Not one person up here is gifted enough to do it alone. I'm going to ask you to have a bold vision for your community and expect us to be a great partner to you. And then lastly, I'm going to ask you to pray for us. Pray for safety as we travel. Pray for wisdom, most importantly, and pray for a servant's heart. Thank you.
Ms. Crouch.
I'm running for governor because I care deeply about Indiana, and I care deeply about you. And I'm the only candidate on the stage that has the experience to be able to deliver results. We want to start by eliminating the state income tax. We're going to axe the tax. We can put money into your pockets. Today, it costs you $11,400 more than it did 3 years ago just to meet basic needs. Now, my opponents, and I'm the only one saying we're going to eliminate a tax, my opponents say it's a gimmick. It can't happen. But what they're really saying is government needs more of your money and you need less of it. We can do it. As former vice chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, as former auditor of state, we can do it. If we limit government growth, if we end wasteful government spending, and we find efficiencies in government, we can give you money, we can allow small business to grow, and we can attract people to Indiana. But I'm also the only candidate on this stage that has said that helping those that struggle with mental illness and addiction will be a top priority. Since COVID, 20% increase in anxiety and depression, suicide, second leading cause of death among young people. And that is why, as governor, we will never have mask mandates or lockdowns, because what it has done to all of us, but particularly our children. I'm running for governor because I want to make sure that Indiana does not become a California, New York, a Michigan, or an Illinois. I'm running to protect our conservative values. As governor, I'll make sure that parents control what's being taught to our children. We'll stand shoulder to shoulder with police and enforce our crime laws to the fullest. We'll axe the tax. We'll live within our means. We're not going to saddle our children and grandchildren with a mountain of debt. You see, the Indiana you and I will build will never cast aside our most vulnerable Hoosiers, the unborn, the elderly, the disabled, those struggling with mental illness and addiction, because they are our families, our friends, and our neighbors. We will never compromise in protecting faith, family, and freedom. I'm Suzanne Crouch. I'm running for governor. I ask for your vote on May 7th so we can build a better Indiana together. Thank you.
And Ms. Ridenour.
Well, Indiana, I would just ask you if you feel like any of that is actually happening right now. We live in a state that says that it's a red state and believes in conservative values, and yet I am trying to figure out where the conservatives are in government. Right now, we are having a big issue in our state because we're discussing matters that you and your communities are also discussing. There's a moral crisis, and there's a very big debate about socialism and capitalism. In our state, what that looks like is it looks like billion-dollar companies investing in this state. We have 100,000 jobs already available. These billion-dollar companies are bringing these high-paying jobs, but I ask you, for what workforce? Because on their watch, these politicians, our education has failed. There are over 100,000 third through eighth graders that are not able to do basic reading and math. That's a failure. 6 years ago, I was asked by the Lord, I was told that I would be the governor of the state of Indiana. I know that sounds wild. I waited for 4 years for that confirmation. I was at Panera. A person came up to me and said that I had a love for more than just my family. It was for the people, and I should follow that love. And then the next week, I heard a man say to me that I needed to let my past go and I needed to walk forward in the calling for my future. And he said I needed to allow the Lord to renew my mind that I might approve his pure and acceptable will. I want you to know, Indiana, that I've done a lot of walking around this state. And it really broke my heart when I saw Hoosier and Boone County that said, this is not our Indiana anymore. If you want billions of dollars in backroom business, choose the politicians. If you want someone that loves freedom, that's going to look out for your families and encourage you to grow in this state through the private sector and through the good people that you are, then check out our website at jamieforingov.com, because that is Indiana goodness.
One thing you all made clear tonight is you don't like my yes or no raise your hand questions. So I'm going to ask the last one, and I'm going to direct it myself. I'm asking myself, who appreciated the fact that these candidates were willing to engage in a vigorous discussion of the issues of importance to Hoosiers? I'll raise my hand. I appreciate you all for doing that. And I also, to those who have watched or listened to this evening's debate, I thank you for caring about our state, its governance, and our collective future. Please remember to vote May 7. I'm John Schwantes, and on behalf of the Indiana Debate Commission, I thank you, and I wish you a good night.
Podcasts by Federated Media.